What's going on, everybody? I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast, and it is a hell of a day to talk ball. And joining me to do just that for a big show. I always say this on the audio side. So if you're watching us live on YouTube, I always say in the little intro, it's a big show. Every show is a big show, but this really is going to be a big show because it's quite literally about big people. And I've got the biggest fan of these big people to talk about this. It is our guy, Nate Tice. Nate, what's going on, buddy?
It is a big show. I was literally quote tweeting you right now about to say literally big show, and then you said it. So it actually kind of worked out perfectly. No, very excited about today's subject. I think the entire NFL media world landscape is loving this subject right now, but I'm excited to talk about it with you, Matt Harmon, because I know we can have a fun little spin on it.
No question. And if the subject of today's show, as we're dancing around, is we're talking about the tight end heavy personnel revolution that the NFL is sort of maybe kind of going through right now. And yes, Nate, I'm not patting ourselves on the back. I'm mostly actually patting you on the back about this because while everybody else is talking about it right now, you and I have been talking about it on this show, mostly thanks to you, for like the last 2 years. Like, I think the first show you did with me on the Fantasy Forecast feed, I believe, was like, hey, why we might see teams skew into more heavy personnel packages, 12 personnel, like why the blocking tight end, talking about like Tip Ryman for the Arizona Cardinals, like why that's going to really matter, you know? That was, I believe, the first show you did with us when you came on here full-time at Yahoo. So again, shout out to you, pal. You've been, everyone else is talking about it right now. You've been talking about it for the last couple of years. We've certainly hit it hard on this feed, but we're going to hit it extra hard here today.
I appreciate it. I do appreciate that because sometimes I'm like, did I say it out loud? I know I wrote about it last year. So that was fun. That was kind of the way I could see where the numbers were trending. We hit a nadir with tight end usage, and or I should say maybe a peak of receiver usage, however you want to look at it. And I think you're seeing this with a few sports going on right now, which is why I love to kind of cross-pollinate ideas and watch other sports. Mm. Like even at basketball, it was like three-pointers. Everybody's going to shoot threes. Everyone's shooting threes. But there's going to be a limit to that. And even this year, you see mid-range game coming back in the NBA game because you hit kind of a peak. You hit where it's not as efficient as it used to be, or there's not enough ways to get to that efficiency, or defenses counter. Defenses always find a way to counter in every single sport, whether it's, you know, or in baseball, it's they make the offenses, they change the rules to help them out. But I mean, in basketball and football, defenses find a way. They're not going to just keep getting hit in the face over and over, or just get beat by the same thing. So I thought the way that that would go and just the body types that were happening was that I thought offenses would get bigger, their offensive line, but also just their personnel usage. And then I saw some of the smarter teams starting to, you know, trickle that in. And some of the maybe even teams that we don't, I mean, maybe me and you do, like the Arthur Smiths of the world, maybe don't think are the smarter guys, but ones that were trying to do something different. I could see the benefits of that and copycat league. And here we are. And I think it just we hit a limit with receivers, or maybe just, you know, if everyone's trying to do it, then that efficiency of using all receiver packages like the Rams did in 2017, it hits a limit. And so I think tight ends right now, tight ends and run game, I should say, are now we're kind of getting back to that. And it's a lot of fun. Long-winded way to say
it is cool. A lot of fun. it is a lot of fun, and it is going to be a fun show talking about all that. But before we do that, we have to talk a little fantasy fallout about a less than fun conversation for one person in particular, one team in particular. And I'm gonna pull back the curtain here, actually, for the listeners and the viewers. Radical honesty we're gonna have here at the top of the podcast. I didn't really want to talk about this Rashee Rice situation. Honestly, I was like, we got a big show with Nate and tight ends. This damn show could be like 3 hours long. I don't want to jam a Rashee Rice segment onto the top of the pod. But you know what? The bosses made me do it. Okay, I'm just going to say it. The bosses made me do it. All right? I have to. We got to talk about the Rashee Rice thing. But you know what? Because that, you're going to
company man.
Fine. Number one, we're probably, well, okay, but we're going to do it the way I want to have the discussion. That's number one. And number two, we are probably going to, now this is going to be a 2-hour podcast. So congratulations, everybody involved. You're going to get a long ass pod because you made me talk about this thing that I don't really want to talk about off the top because I don't really know what to say about the fact that Rashee Rice, who is going to serve 30 days in jail for violating his probation because he tested positive for marijuana. Also, as Adam Schefter reported, 1 week before being ordered to serve 30 days in jail, Kansas City Chiefs wide receiver Rashee Rice underwent a cleanup surgery on his right knee to remove loose debris that was causing inflammation and now is expected to sideline him 2 months. Again, that is the report here, which prompted our buddy Mike Golic Jr. to clip from Schefter's article, probably the most insane thing I've ever read in a, like, hey, this guy's going to get a surgery recap article. This is the direct quote that Mike Golic has from Adam Schefter's article. Now Rice is in a Dallas County jail and will be unable to get the type of medical attention and rehab that could have expedited his return from his recent knee surgery. Rice still is expected to be ready for training camp later this summer, but he also is facing the uncertainty of having to recover while in jail. I mean, Nate, we've been doing this a long time. I don't think I've ever read this sentence. He's going to be facing the uncertainty of having to recover while in jail.
It's been a while.
React. I don't know what to say.
It's been a while. Well, recording Football 301 yesterday with Bill Barnwell and Greg Rosenthal. Everyone make sure you go check that out. It was a very fun show. But when I drafted Patrick Mahomes, I kind of was like talking, you know, through this season where it was like the discussion was, all right, how do you value Mahomes just talking about him in 2026 as opposed to what he is in his career, which is to me easily QB1. Oh, you know, Josh Allen, man. But Mahomes, we're talking about it. I was like, all right, but if you look at the skill guys, yeah, it's not great. I like how they improved the run game a little bit. You know, Rashee Rice, as long as he can stay healthy and out of trouble and not get arrested. And I think we finished recording at 11 p.m. West Coast time. And ESPN's tweet of Rashee Rice was at 12:17 p.m. I got to look for when Schefter's, what time that one was at. But, yeah, that's 11:36. So around 11:30. So about 30 minutes after we finished recording. And then about, you know, 6-8 hours later, then it came out about the surgery. And I haven't seen a situation like this where a player repeatedly getting in trouble, but also not only repeatedly getting in trouble, like also having just this stuff happening, injuries happening as well. It feels very 90s NFL. It feels like players that of yesteryear, like pre-Goodell. Pre-protect the shield days. And this is kind of the Chiefs. They are willing to take risks on, especially on character guys. That's how they got Tyreek Hill. Tyreek Hill didn't go on day three because of ability. It was because of off field. And so that's what the Chiefs are going to go after. And that's some of the value that they get. And they say, hey, we can help them out. There have been positive cases of that, but this is just, it's a repeat. It's stuff happening one after another. But then even just talking about this, just in a frank matter, if this is just the one thing, being in jail and recovering, rehab is so important, especially right after you get surgery, because you don't want scar tissue to build up. You have to be diligent. Like usually when guys get surgery, they're working with the team trainers on a daily plan that takes hours. It's like a workout and then on top of your normal workout, if you can. So this is a guy that's already struggled with injuries, some decently major ones. And then now is just having this off-field stuff. So it was just like the 1-2 punch of all of this. It was just a succinct way to kind of like sum up Rashee Rice. And I know how you feel about Rice. I do think he has a ton of ability. He's a raw kind of, he's a Mustang. He's a wild horse kind of a player. I do see the appeal of him just as a player, but now this off-field stuff kind of just keeps stacking up and it's just like, it's not what the Chiefs need. The Chiefs needed a calm offseason. And of course it's just, and they need Rice. Like for this whole thing to work this year in a wide open AFC, they need Rice to be on the field. And now it's like, again? And yeah. So that was just kind of that's honestly my first kind of reaction to all this. Like I haven't tweeted anything. I haven't thought anything. So that was just kind of my blunt reaction to all that. It's just very frustrating, I think, especially what the Chiefs need this season.
Yeah. My first reaction, honestly, Nate, was a lot of that, but also like, of course, I mean, this is a player who's just shown you can't count on him for a variety of reasons. Yep. And, you know, I said I wanted to have a conversation like this in the fashion that I want to have it. You know, and that's like, I don't want to see him be like, okay, well now where does Rashee Rice slide in ADP? I don't know. I said on this show like 2 months ago that he was one of the biggest sells in Dynasty because of stuff like this, but it's not just stuff like this, because here's the thing that I think goes unnoticed a lot in fantasy circles. And I was tweeting with Jacob Sanderson about this yesterday. Like the Chiefs offense, even when Rashee Rice was active and really productive last season, wasn't good. like the this is something that I think from like a macro fantasy take always gets lost in the sauce here. When a guy is productive, and in, you said, again, this is obviously my opinion, the film doesn't necessarily match the production. He's a really good zone beater and really good with the ball in his hands, but there are flaws in his game. And the offense isn't successful while like as successful as it should be while that player is productive. I think you got to really discount that production because the team is going to be looking at like, all right, how can we get better? How can we find a new dimension? Because yes, we weren't what we wanted to be last year. But this kind of brings me back to the Kansas City, and like the other insane part of this, in addition to how just insane this Rice story is, I think it's just categorically insane that they were going to run this receiver room back again this year, yeah, plus Cyrus Allen, fifth round pick, who I actually really, really like. I really do like Cyrus Allen.
I was going to say, and your guy, Cyrus Allen. Yeah.
Yeah. He's a fifth round pick.
I did a deeper watch on him, and I do understand the appeal. I understand the appeal. Like, I understand that pick. Like, that one really has marinated in a more positive way as I've kind of like, as the weeks have gone on. Like, I like that one a little bit better. Maybe it's because I drafted him.
Yeah, I said you get two drinks in me, I'll tell you that he's the best man coverage beater on the Chiefs. Now at this point, it might be like one and a half drinks. I don't know. So again, it's just
one
to
shot
me,
and this, a pat on the back.
That's right. That's all it takes. Like at this point, it's just. This receiver room is crazy to have run this back, and now you got to start to ask, yeah, like, is another move coming here? You know, people have speculated about getting in the AJ Brown, you know, trade discussion. Yeah. I think maybe we'll see. To me, like, this team should have signed Stephon Diggs 5 days ago. And I know Diggs obviously has had a non-clean offseason himself, right, but he was found not guilty for whatever, you know, that's worth. So he's available to play football games, theoretically. He is available on the free agent market. You don't have to send a first-round pick to the Eagles for a receiver who's on the decline. And Diggs was, like, fifth in the NFL in yards per route run last year. Top 15.
Yeah, I know.
Better than that in yards per out run against man coverage on tape, still could clearly beat man coverage. Like, that's a thing that should happen right now. Like, they should do it regardless of the Rice thing and the fact that their best receiver, who is a flawed player in his own right, is going to be in jail rehabbing an injury even more so.
And it's just like, they need Rice to make this thing go because Kelce is really falling off. And I think Kelce is still an above average, I would say, you know, contributor, but you'd prefer him to be your number three, number maybe even number four target. And he's gonna really keep eating targets. He has the chemistry with Mahomes. So that's the thing, is they need Rice to slot him down. And now it's like, okay, now we're just building this thing out of receiver threes or target threes, I should say, you know, with Thornton,
yeah,
who's an auxiliary guy. He's a deep threat only. And he was great in that role. Him and Mahomes had kind of just one of those. Sometimes some players just got chemistry with certain guys. Usually it's with the best quarterbacks, but some guys just have chemistry with certain guys, you know, and Thornton and Mahomes have chemistry. So that's one thing, but Worthy is a specific player. Like, he has to be used in certain ways. And again, now if Rice is not, you can't rely on him, then okay, Worthy has to have a bigger role. And that's not just kind of where he's at right now. He has to be used in just like off ball, I think better in motion. And there's stuff that I do think he's good at, but man, you're just hoping Rice, and this thing, Rice still might play, like, you know, like, but it's just more of a long-term picture of building this whole thing out. Like, I don't know where I feel about the Chiefs, because I talked more about Mahomes yesterday on the show, and it's just like, looking at them right now, they're trying to revamp the defense, get, you know, draft some impact players with the Peter Woods pick, with the Lane in the first round, and really just kept addressing defense, giving Spags some toys to work with, trying to get younger there and letting some other guys go. But the offense was, they're obviously going to be running the ball a little bit more, but it is Andy Reid. So it's still going to be a lot of quick games, still going to be a lot of things. So I'm really trying to just envision this. Are they using more Bieniemy stuff when he comes in? Sorry, I actually just really want to talk about the Chiefs. are you using more Bieniemy stuff here? Because their personnel, like, I'm just trying to envision how this whole thing's going to work. Are they going to rely a lot on the run game to really, until Mahomes gets there? And so then if Rice does have an injury, does that like kind of give them get a jail out free card? No, I was trying to think of a different term, and that was just the only one that came to mind.
Pun.
So I'm sorry. I know that you see me hesitate. I was like, come on, think of something different. But that's the only one that came to mind. But give them a pass. Like, okay, maybe this offense we can withstand until Mahomes is fully healthy, even though they're saying week one, and maybe until Rice is fully healthy, because they're saying campish, but still, that's not preferred. But it's just one of these things. Their O-line, I think, is going to be really good. And the I really like the Walker signing. Like, they got some juice on that offense now with a line that can really build a run game. Just curious how it's gonna work out. And now, you know, Rice is already a guy that needs more polish, and now he's just still more unreliable stuff. But yeah, I'm all over the place with the Chiefs. I'm very excited to actually keep talking about them, because I am kind of more optimistic than I thought I was going to be. But then this happens. And so now, yeah, I'm just like, right. I'm kind of back to square one, you know, and it's like, all right, I'll talk about you guys in August.
Exactly. I honestly think I come down maybe a little more pessimistic about them looking at, because I think part of the reason that we can sit here and say, like, I think it was crazy that they didn't do more to address this wide receiver room, but they also had a lot to do this offseason, part of which, yes, on offense is fixing this run game. I mean, in addition to everything you needed to do on the defensive side of it, which is why I do come down to what you said, which is, I think part of their answer and like, how are we going to be better offensively, is we're going to be both more consistent. They generally were like a pretty decent success rate team with guys like Kareem, yeah, Hunt and Isaiah Pacheco, but there was no explosive play element to it. So I think they want to, and they drafted Emmett Johnson too, who could kind of be like a grinder, yep, back for them a little bit too. Like, maybe be the, you know, to use a tortured analogy because it's Kenneth Walker, but like, maybe he could be the Zach Charbonnet to Kenneth Walker, you know, coming in here, obviously. But I think that they can form like a,
is there a title of that, like skewing, the most frustrating other running back in the backfield? Is there just like a term for that other than everybody being mad online? But is there just like you have your sacrificial axe, you know, I have power slot. Is there something for that frustrating running back? Yeah, I'm actually more of a Charbonnet fan than most people, but I think that's maybe our work assignment for the summer is come up with a term that is that kind of frustrating running back in the backfield that takes 40% of the snaps or half the snaps and that the coaches love. You know, maybe it's just the teacher's pet.
Yeah, I usually call it the coach's pet. I would just call it like, yeah, he's the coach's pet guy, but it's got to be a specific type for that. You know, it's got to be, yeah, like this, which Charbonnet is that, like, generally, yes, gets the yards that are there and is a good in pass protection, that whole deal. Yep. You know, maybe Emmett Johnson, again, could he be that guy? I don't know. It's not a perfect analogy for him. But anyways, point of all that is that I do think that some of the, like, hey, again, just to come back to an actionable fantasy take here, which is not so much specifically with this position, but more like a big brain thought, because I think that they're again, answer to how the offense is going to be better this year is we're going to be a better running team. We're going to be a little, mm-hmm, bit more consistent and explosive as a ground game. Part of that is going to just mathematically eat into the, hey, Rashee Rice kind of scammy targets, the screens, the yes, pop passes, the drag routes, stuff like that. And to me, again, that's just what my advice to people about this, not this situation specifically, but what this situation makes me think of is, if you want to get an edge on people, it's that, like, okay, that production is there. And even on a per route basis, and I'm not saying Rice sucks, like, he doesn't suck. He's obviously a really, really useful, like, capital U player, no, but he is a very specific. Hey, I hate him. It's a very specific. And look, he's one of my biggest draft misses of all time. Like, he's way outkicked my expectations.
He's been such a different player than I expected he's put in.
Correct. Yeah. Yes, exactly. Yeah. Like, I evaluate him as like a bad sacrificial X receiver, and they took him and put him into this like power slot role, which I didn't, yards after catch. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Completely different than what he was doing in college. So yeah, like, big miss on me. So but again, like, the production is there on a per out basis, efficient stuff like that, but there's still an element missing in the offense. Like, I think you just gotta look one, yeah, level deeper at that. I don't know if Kansas City's looked one level deeper at that, which is why I think they find themselves in this kind of tough predicament right now. But we are going to take our first quick break. We come back, we're actually going to get into the topic of the show today. We're going to talk tight ends and the heavy personnel package revolution. We're going to get into that right after this. All right, we're back, and we can finally get into the meat of the show here, the actual discussion we want to have, which is the heavy personnel slash tight end revolution in the NFL. And again, if you've been living under a rock, you haven't kind of paid attention to the NFL in the last, 12 months or whatever. Last year, it was a big talking point as the Rams really were kind of the funhouse mirror version of this and really leaned into like 13 personnel for a stretch of the season. Plus the Seattle Seahawks, who were one of the heavier teams in the NFL on offense, won this game that you might have heard of called the Super Bowl. If you look at just across across league wide, and I put these stats together, the NFL saw a minus, like a 5.2 percentage point drop in their amount of plays with three plus receivers on the field last year. So teams are definitely going away from that 11 personnel kind of bread and butter that we were in. You know, when the, I mean, even just a couple, again, the funny part of this is that the Rams a couple of years ago in 2023 were the only team that were 90 percentage points at over 90% over 11 personnel. The Panthers were second at 87%. Last year, nobody was over 70%. So it is definitely the amount of plays with three plus receivers on the field, the amount of times you're having that true like slot only guy on the field, that is all going down at this point. So Nate, to table set here, this is happening clearly. We saw this again, if you've been living under a rock, you saw this very clearly in the NFL draft when from pick 24 in the second round all the way to pick 31 in the third round, we saw a bunch of inline blocking tight ends go off the board. Obviously, Eli Stowers was a second round pick, but he doesn't really fit into the sort of trend here. Also, Matthew Hibner out of SMU went to the Ravens at the fourth round, pick 33. So we could bucket him in here as well. But Nate Borkircher to the Jags kicked it off. And then we just saw a bunch of these inline guys go off the board on day two. So clearly, again, this, yes, it is happening. The question is, Nate, you started to allude to this at the top in the intro, but let's expand on a little bit. Like, why is this happening?
Yeah, I think this draft run too is it's kind of a chicken and egg thing, because yes, it's a trend where more teams do want to add more playable tight ends that they can have on the field, but also it's just that there's more playable tight end prospects available in this range. This is probably the most why tight ends, inline tight ends, as far as just good ones, like good in like a. In typical grading terms, a wide tight end that maybe is not a, you know, a true first round prospect is typically graded as a third rounder, you know, just the equivalent of one. And what that's what happened with a lot of these guys. Like, I would even include Borkircher, who I has in my top 100. I wasn't shocked he went in, went on day two. It was just that he went first. That was more what was the shocking thing for me. But then Klein is projects as a wide tight end. Sam Roush, Oscar Delp, Will Carmick, Kerrick Merrick, and even Eli Raridan. And there's a couple guys on day three as well. So all those guys can play in line. And all these multi tight end looks, I think some people have attributed where you have to emphasize. I think people are like, well, if you want to go multi tight end, you want to have a bunch of receiving tight ends. It's actually the opposite. You need the wide tight end to make the whole thing go. Because you need at least one valid inline blocker. Otherwise, you just have three receiving. That's what the Eagles tried to do last year. Oh, we went two tight ends, but it's Grant Calcaterra and beat up Dallas Goedert just getting steamrolled. So it's like, there's no advantage there. So we can just go nickel, five DBs. We can go dime, six DBs, because we're not threatened by those guys whatsoever. And that's the other thing too, is that if you do have valid blockers and the defense has to emphasize, or it has to focus on that and either go, we go base defense with four DBs, or we go nickel DBs, sub personnel, and we use certain formations so we don't get, you know, punched in the mouth over and over. So that's the other thing that is kind of a fun little micro view, especially game breakdown view, something we talk about maybe even more in Football 301, is that then you get into certain defensive looks and then you can guarantee coverages. And that's what the Rams did, like, to a wonderful extent last year. Was if we get 13 personnel, yeah, they might match with nickel, but they're matching with nickel with only a couple coverages called. We make these very defenses that are very, defenses are very complex right now. And they, and a lot of defenses have big menus with a lot of stuff where they can invert stuff, they disguise stuff. But if you can get to simplify and get it down to, okay, they have nine looks usually on second and long, and now we got them down to three looks, that just makes everyone's lives a little bit easier. Quarterback, offensive line, et cetera, et cetera. So I alluded at the show is that some of it is that there's been available bodies. There's more inline guys right now. Some of it is that the looks out of sub personnel, 11 personnel, what the defenses were doing to it kind of got maxed out. A lot more zone coverages. That's why, again, you're going to get more safeties playing in the slot on defense too. You got bigger bodies there. So offenses are trying to answer right now with having a bigger slot guy or a second tight end to block the Nick Emmanuelis of the world, the Brian Branches of the world when he's in the slot, but the Kyle Hamiltons when he's in the slot. Those guys are 225. That's a Will linebacker. You know, that's just a hybrid thing. Like that. And to me, sorry, I'm sorry. I've been excited to kind of talk about this because I've been kind of thinking like, okay, this is where we're at right now in football world, in the football world, where the meta is right now. You don't want to just get stuck in the meta. You want to break through. The Rams have been very good. Sean McVay has been very good at being at the forefront of what's breaking the meta. It's Kyle Shanahan too. But what did McVay do? Okay, we're going to run more duo because defenses are lighter and that's more an at-you run game. And we're going to get bigger bodies on the field. My other theory is to go super light and super fast. You want to put a safe three safeties on the field and maybe not the fastest guys, but they're big and burly and can play in the box. Then go super light with very, very fast guys. And they go 10 personnel, which is four wide receivers. That's just a theory of mine. And I'm curious if any team leans into it. I think it's a specific sub package you don't base out of it. But that's been one of my things. It's like, all right, if the Seahawks want to play bigger nickel, well, then let's just go super fast and just go as fast as possible. You know, kind of go tempo, we go speed. And I think more teams might lean into that, more tempo and more speed on the field. Like Cliff Kingsbury's with the Rams right now. If you can tell, I got some theories brewing for whenever we talk about it even a little bit more. But yeah,
good. No, yeah. Let's put a pin in that because that's what I was going to ask you the second part about like what's next or whatever. But yeah. just kind of brass tacks about like why again back on why this is happening. Nate did a really good job of talking about this and just. If you really want to make it simple, it's just like the league is always moves and counter moves. And as we got like lighter on defense to account for all these spread concepts and 11 personnel, teams were eventually going to pivot back into the running game and actually, you know, maximizing that. But if you're going to do that, you also need to marry your run and your pass game together, which is why like, again, credit to you, Nate, you've been talking about like more of these inline guys like the Tucker Crafts, like the AJ Barners, and why I think the fantasy space has been behind on this with like obsessing about like actually blocking doesn't matter. Your ability to play in line doesn't matter. Well, then you get Dalton Kincaid, who I know always gets like slammed in these conversations and stuff like that, but it is a part of this. So we see just again, overall, like these teams leaning into these things, but the other part of this too. And this is where I think from an actionable standpoint, we're going to come back to this at the end of the show and why, even as a wide receiver guy, as you know, we are seeing fewer of these like slot receivers and stuff like that, that true slot option, the guys by the way, a lot of players I really like Jaden Reed, you know, Curtis Samuel back in the day, like that archetype of player is kind of getting pushed aside a little bit. Why I still like this trend, because yeah, you're getting these big burly blocking tight ends on the field, but again, we're trying to marry the run and the pass game together. When you are able to activate the play action like that, that's where you can get these obnoxiously good wide receiver seasons, to the point that Jaxon Smith-Njigba last year, which on the team that did this extremely well, he had a 30, he was targeted on 33.5% of his routes. He averaged 3.68 yards per out run. He had a 36% target share of the Seahawks offense, which was the most since 2015. Like, I mean, well, it's most of the last 10 years, most is since 2015 to current. DeAndre Hopkins in the 2017 season was second with 34%. Michael Thomas on the 2019 Saints was 33%. So, and again, I have more numbers about this later about even how wide receiver efficiency goes up. So when we're talking about like drafting for fantasy and stuff like that, this matters also at the wide receiver position, not just like more body types at tight end.
Yeah, it really does, because they get the thing when you get into two tight end looks or even three tight end looks is the pass plays off of them are usually deeper attacking. So it leads to more explosives and bigger chunk plays and opportunities for touchdowns. And I think JSN's a perfect example of that. That's the thing. You get more tight ends on the field, it's juicier opportunities for the guys actually running those routes, because the play action concepts off of them, the tight ends are going to stay in the block. And then the two guys running the routes, usually the two receivers, maybe sometimes it's the three guys, but those are all going to be 15 yards down the field routes, maybe even longer. I can just even envision JSN against the Jaguars this year, where it's just like, it was just chunk play after chunk play after chunk play. And it was all out of two tight end looks. So that's where there is a lot of benefits. AJ Brown, when he was with the Titans, that's another one, like where he was just all these play actions and it was big, juicy dig routes. There's PPR scams out there. You know, there's the quick game. But if you get bigger, you can typically attack downfield. As I'm wearing the sweatshirt, but like my football dogma is a lot of it was based out of playing at Wisconsin. And even how my dad has looked at football too. But at Wisconsin is, yeah, we ran the ball a ton, but our quarterbacks were hyper efficient and hyper explosive. Russell Wilson was the highest extent of that because he could throw a beautiful deep ball. But it became all these, like, if you look at Russell Wilson's like stat lines, he had games where he's like 14 of 15, 280 yards. It leads to just great opportunity. It's why I'm super excited about Justin Herbert this year. I'm spoiling one of the teams we're going to talk about because, yeah, he might not pass as much as we've seen in the past, especially under Joe Lombardi. But, oh my God, look at Tua's efficiency in these offenses. Now imagine Justin Herbert ripping off 20-yarder after 20-yarder after 20-yarder with big opportunities to score touchdowns too, because that's what downfield attacks do. So that's where there's the trickle-down of all this, and that's why the perfect world is you can do everything well, but there is a lot of benefits to having receivers in these offenses from fantasy terms. And there's going to be a lot of guys that I think do benefit. Ladd McConkey, you know,
100%. Oh yeah. No, again. Yeah. We'll talk about the Chargers for sure. We're going to talk about several teams that are actually going to really lean into this and everything like that. And yeah, I mean, it's a great way of saying this. Like these passing concepts are so much more downfield oriented to the point that, like, yeah, Jackson Smith and Jigba, not necessarily regarded as this like deep threat receiver, but he was the most productive receiver in the NFL on 20 plus yard passes last year because of you get the defensive packages that you want in there, and you get a guy who obviously is a great route runner and a three level threat and somebody I always really liked against man coverage, yada, yada, yada. But you're able to just get more of like those looks for him that he can become the most explosive player in the NFL at the wide receiver position, a guy who was in the first year of his career under Shane Waldron, you know, like a PPR scam receiver. So it just
bubbles and screens,
bubbles and screens, like that, and little, you know, cutesy short passes. Like, and this guy becomes most effective receiver in the NFL. He's always capable of doing more, but like the scheme really maximizes him. So there is that potential for these wide receivers, especially because this also concentrates the targets. Again, we'll talk about this more when we get into specific receiver situations. But before we get into some teams that we think are really going to lean into this, you touched on it a little bit. And whenever we have these like big brain conversations about, like, oh, this is what the league is doing right now, I always want to remind people that we are always, even if, Nate, we have been talking about this a lot the last couple of years, we're still generally chasing the league. Like, we won't ever get right on time with the trend. So there's at least a part of me, and maybe it's just the contrarian part of me, that at least wants to ask, and you already started talking about like what's the next phase, is there a chance we're overrating this, right? Like, we're going to spend the next on football dork Twitter and fantasy Twitter talking about like, how can we benefit from these heavy personnel teams? We're going to do that for the next 3 months, and then it's really not going to be that big of a deal. Is there a chance that that does happen this year?
Well, that's the thing. It's not just a magic wand. It's not like, oh, okay, two tight ends and we're good now. Like, we even look at the Browns, we're good. You know, two tight ends play action. Like, you still have to have the guys.
The Falcons are up there. We're showing the screen right here. Like, these teams that really leaned into it last year. You see Rams, Seahawks, Bears. Awesome. Okay, the first two teams are Falcons, Browns. Not exactly pinnacle of offensive success the last year.
And sometimes it's limitations of receivers like that. That's why they have to lean into it, or vice versa. But no, I do think that this defenses haven't been threatened enough that they have to change. So this is the offense's way. So I think this is going to be the year I can kind of maybe tell more about whether this, like, what's the maximum of this or what is the limit of this, where I do think it trickles back. I'm curious, too, is that offenses are more aggressive on third down now, and they run the ball more on third down. That, I think last year was the highest run rate on like third and three plus ever in NFL history, because fourth down is live for a lot more teams now. So that opens up more opportunities for two tight end or more looks. So kind of third down becomes second down becomes another first down kind of thing, line of thinking. So I don't think we've reached the maximum of this year, I think this year. I think there's stuff to pick at still for offenses. I think maybe next year, then we start to get to see the next step. But I do think this year, this will continue. Maybe we'll get tired of it from a talking point, but I do think it's going to be very real. But I did already hinted at it, that I do think the next way to go is probably tempo, and going more to not let defenses get into funkier looks and crazy personnel packages, and get to more of their offense from a non-huddled look. So I do think that is, you know, tempo doesn't just always mean go fast. You know, tempo my head, or tempo, it just means no huddle. That's maybe the best way to put it. And I do think that maybe more offenses go to that. That's where I'm curious with where kind of the meta goes. I also think this is why being a valid blocker, you don't have to be great, but just valid enough for defenses to honor you as a blocker, is that defenses are really good with tendencies now. So if they know you're on the field, okay, it's 90% pass. You know, if this one tight end, if Grant Calcaterra, he's just my guy for this. If he's on the field as the only tight end, I bet you it's like 95% pass rate. So if you're valid enough where you can turn it into a 60-40, 65-35, again, that's why you want this. But why I'm bringing that up is I do think where running backs are aligned, this is why teams want to go more to under center. That is a big tell. If the running back is aligned to the tight end, that's called a strong. If he's aligned normal, it's weak away. And then you can get to certain run concepts. And I see smart offenses already playing with that right now. And even in the college level, like Indiana's was really playing with that to like mess with defenses and their calls. But I do think there's going to be something to that. And that's why more teams want to get to under center, is that it hides where the running back is aligned because he's in a home position right behind the quarterback, like in a typical alignment. So under center, I think, is going to keep increasing. I think we see more under center dropbacks without play action. So those are some of the trends. I think I'm going to write an article on this. Depends how lazy I am in June. But those would be kind of some of the bullet points, I think, of where kind of the next steps are.
Oh, yeah. June is always like, I got this kicking around in my head, but do I really want to do that? Just last year, teams camp that were the heaviest under center teams, Rams were number one, Seahawks number two, Bills number three, Lions, Bears, Niners, Patriots, Vikings, Jacksonville. Those were the teams that were the heaviest under center teams. So, yeah, you can see a lot of where this, which coaching tree is really pushing these buttons and which are not at this point. You just really quickly, you mentioned like the, which teams, you can't just like wave the magic wand. A lot of times it's also like, you know, who's your quarterback? What personnel do you have? You can't just be like, bibbity bobbity 13 personnel, we're going to make this offense more efficient. I think a team like Carolina this year, I've been talking about this a lot, I think could be one of these teams that goes away from the trend because their quarterback is better at it. He was really good at empty in 2024. I've talked about those stats a lot.
Yep.
He had like, I think, 96 attempts out of empty in 2024 and 88 last year. And he got friggin' benched in 2024. So, yeah, great designs out of it. They have, I think, four valid receivers in McMillan, Coker, Leggett, and then Chris Brazel, who they took this year. They don't really have like a tight end or they don't have a bunch of like big body inline tight ends to lean into this. So they'll be an interesting team to monitor in terms of going the other way. And then, you know, just lastly, you said like I do wonder if like the jitterbug fast slot receiver comes back at some point, like, cause that guy's kind of waning out of like existence right now, but you know, your Josh Downses of the world in Indianapolis, like, does that become more of a thing for them this year because they are trying to beat these nickel packages and get layups and things like that. So yeah, it's always moves and counter moves, everything like that. But let's get into teams that are specifically doing this. So the first ones I want to talk about are the teams that are the bread and butter teams, like who's already doing this very well. I would say the three that are clearly doing this really well, and if you have others, please, you know, let me know. But one, we've already mentioned them, the Seahawks, the Rams, obviously, and then the Bears are the team that really strike me. The three that are doing this very well, they're leaning into heavier personnel packages, not always necessarily 13, a lot of 12, of course, in Seattle and definitely in Chicago. But not only did they lean into it, they were effective when they did it. So those to me are the teams, like when we're talking about how do we keep an eye out for this trend, which players can benefit, I think we have to start with Los Angeles, Seattle, and Chicago.
Yep. Rams even seem like they're leaning even more into it, drafting another tight end. That's contract too. That's the bridge to this year and future years, which seems like a couple of draft picks with Ty Simpson too. But it was just that is the, you know, with Max Clair from Ohio State. I mean, I think the Rams have five playable tight ends right now. Some teams don't even have two. Some teams don't even have one. They have five guys that are legit. I think Colby Parkinson is the best all-around one, but his contract ends up after this year. But they're leaning fully into it. And another thing, too, it's an ability to pivot. It's a hedge against injuries. You know, that if you lean fully into three receivers and one of them gets hurt, okay, now we have to go two tight ends. Oh, shoot, our second tight end sucks. That's why we got three receivers. You know, the Rams have two great receivers and then I think a couple of nice auxiliary guys. But now, okay, Davante Adams at 34 years old, if he gets banged up, which he will because he's gotten banged up, And well, now we're fine. We can live in 13 tight end or 13 personnel. We can live in 14 personnel if we need to and still have the athletes to spread it out. You know, Terrence Ferguson's a great athlete who ran a lot of vertical routes last year. Max Clair, great athlete. Higbee, like, yeah, his better days are, you know, his best days are behind him, but still can get vertical. Parkinson's a good athlete. And even Davis is a decent athlete as well. So they have enough guys that can, yeah, they're not going to run post routes 30 yards down the field, but that 10 to 20 yard range that Stafford lives in, they can still get to that offense with Puka Nacua, pending anything happening with him. Yeah. I don't want to jinx any more receivers, you know, so like anything with Puka Nacua, but I think, yeah, it's all systems go for them. You know, the Rams are one of the favorites to win the Super Bowl this year. I don't think that should shock anybody. And I think that they actually have the means to do this. Sorry, again, with the cross sports analogy, this is when the 3-point revolution was happening in the 2010s. Everyone started doing it, but then their teams are shooting like 29% from three and 30% from three. And it's like, yeah, you can say you shoot threes, but you got to still make them. You know, you got to still like be a valid answer. So the Rams have the personnel and the horses to actually do this and withstand injuries that are going to inevitably come up during an NFL season.
Yeah, that's the Terrence Ferguson thing will be really interesting to watch this year because a lot of times last year, like they definitely threw him the ball downfield. He wasn't always necessarily going to catch it or be in the right place where he was supposed to be or, you know, whatever, tracking it the whole day. He's a raw player, of course, but he was a guy that they could split out and, you know, weaponize in that way. He also is fast enough at the tight end position when you get into this is where, we might jump the shark on the 13 personnel part of it. 12, I'm totally open, but I do think sometimes like we're overemphasizing on like, okay, which teams are going to run 13 personnel and who's going to be the one wide receiver that like that might not happen as often, I think, as we think, mostly because like one of the reasons the Rams could lean into it on, you know, 40%+ of their snaps is like Terrence Ferguson is so fast that he can be like a sacrificial player. Yep. Like he can actually clear out space for the Puka Nacua inbreakers and dig. Like they can run dagger with Terrence Ferguson running the vertical route. Not a lot of teams could do that with their tight ends. Exactly. So that is one where we will see on that one. But I mean, a team like the other two teams, just to hit on here quickly, I do think Bears and Seahawks. We kind of it will be fun to talk about the Bears when we get to like which pass catchers can benefit here because they have three really interesting pass catchers. We certainly know what's going on with the Rams from a receiver standpoint, but these two teams I do expect to lean into it and lean into it well because. I mean, well, we'll see about Brian Flores as the offensive coordinator in Seattle, but like Ben Johnson, man, I just charted Luther Burden for reception perception. I just did Rome Odunze yesterday, finished him up too. That offense just kicks ass, man. It is awesome. So good and so well designed. And like, it's only going this way. So the fact that they are on this trend, the fact that they have Ben Johnson, they have all these cool young players, it's definitely a unit to invest in for sure.
It was one of the most tangibly like the improvement throughout the year was so tangible. Like it was just so cool to watch as far as like snaps and penalties and operation stuff to like what it became at the end of the year, which is still like not a complete thing or a polished, wholly polished thing. So I'm just so excited to see this group take that next step. I mean, all these young guys returning into the same offense. Very excited about I'm bullish on the Bears. But no, what's cool about their tight end group, because they added Sam Roush in the third round. I liked Roush, had him in the top 100. Some people had him even higher than I did, but he's a Y. He doesn't have the longest arms, but he has strength, and he's a good athlete. So we're talking about these tight ends that are going to get vertical. That's what's amazing about Colson Loveland. Loveland can play inline and also run routes vertically. He was ISO'd. He was running sail routes. They used him like an X receiver. So they can go 13 personnel. And run 12 personnel looks. That's another thing. That was the beauty of the inverse of this, of Sean McVay going fully 11, was he was doing 12 and 13 personnel looks out of 11. This is the opposite. This is getting to 11 personnel looks out of 13, you know, and that's what you're trying to do with the defenses. We're showing you a different look than what you prepared for. Loveland's a star. I think a lot of people are on board with that, but now you got Cole Kmet, Colson Loveland, and Sam Roush. All guys can block in line. And all are good enough athletes to at least get to the 15-yard range as a route runner. Not a lot of teams have three Ys that can also run routes. That's cool. No. So, no, we're not even talking about the receivers. I'm just so excited to see what Ben Johnson does with this. Like, this is – I'm really already pre-geeking out about it because that's – I can't – it's been a while because I can think of an offense that had this. that three guys that in theory can do these things. I'm not as big on Komet as other people, but Loveland's awesome. And I'm excited to see what they do with Roush. So this is going to be a really, really cool matchup. And then you got Ndunze, who's a great blocker. Luther Burden, who's a great blocker, shockingly. And then, I mean, it's kind of cool. Now he's just dropping Khalif Raymond. So their 13 personnel looks are going to be dangerous. Their 12 personnel looks are going to be dangerous. And defenses are going to have to like really pick their poison with them. Bears offense, very, very cool. Even if the offensive line, you know, still have a couple of things.
We'll see.
But it's going to be a cool offense.
No, it really is. Like, they have the potential to truly go empty and get into 13 personnel. And it's like, I think both are really credible formations for this offense. So like, we will talk Bears receivers specifically when we get to that section of the show, because they're one of these teams that clearly could benefit from this from an efficiency perspective with these wideouts. Yeah. But this is why my answer to like, who do you draft from the Bears pass catching group is yes. Like, draft all these guys. You mentioned Loveland. Like, again, I was just watching this. I believe it was from their divisional round playoff game they have Colson Loveland as the farthest in a 3-by-1 set. Like, he's either sometimes he's isolated over there, other times like on the three side he's the X receiver, and Ndunze and Burden are in the slot. And it's like, that's why this team just blurs the, like, everyone's trying to find like who's the slot guy. People are still on the Amon-Ra St. Brown role. Like, there's no roles like that in this offense. All the lines are blurred. Everybody's playing everywhere, which is just going to create so many headaches. So I couldn't be more excited about the Bears offense. What a thing to say in the year 2026. What a time to be alive. Okay, we are going to take another quick break. We come back, we'll talk about some other teams who might be leaning into this. We will get into that right after this. All right, we're back. So on the other side of the break, we talked about teams that have already leaned into this. We'll probably just double down, if not triple down, on it this year. But let's talk about some teams that will lean into it more this year. I have five here on my list, Nate. I've got the Baltimore Ravens, who were already kind of in a lot of 12 and heavy personnel packages. But I think Declan Doyle coming over from Chicago, I'm actually interested, like, who the tight ends would be in this situation, but we'll come back to that. I think they'll lean into it this year. The Texans were one of the least heavy personnel teams last year, but I think are going to flip the script a little bit this year. The Dolphins as well. The Jaguars led off that run with Nate Borkircher, and then you mentioned it, the Chargers. Clear signal there. Maybe we can start with the Chargers. Clear signal there. Not only did they sign Charlie Kolar and Alec Ingold, tight end and fullback in free agency, then they came back around after the draft and added David Njoku. They've got a lot of potential to have 13 personnel, 22 personnel, you know, a lot of different personnel packages they could run out this year after being one of the most heavy 3+ wide receiver teams last year.
Yeah, they. I'm all about what they were trying to do there. Because that's the thing, Njoku, is he had such a funny career arc, because as he came into the league, he was super young. You would envision, because he was such a good athlete, he'd be a good receiver. We'll see how he's blocking. He became a good inline blocker. The Browns were always able to do some of these outside runs because Njoku was such a good blocker. Some of his efforts kind of waned. I think maybe he'll get a little spark there, and maybe injuries, maybe that hinders it too. But here he doesn't have to be the only guy. Now they have two guys that can do that. And Njoku's athletic enough to be at least, again, an intermediate threat. And then Gadsden's such a great athlete. So, but now he's freed up, where now he can actually never has to worry about, okay, now he doesn't have to be hidden as much. Like, they can actually just get to him to an advantage spot, as opposed to like, oh, we just have to put him here. So opens those things up. I'm all systems go on Hampton this year. I think that he might have just a great, phenomenal year because he has the speed to excel in this offense. And I just think that these tight ends are going to allow them to, because they can actually set the edge. And that's where it kind of creates a lot of those advantages, when you have guys that can seal the edge, that get the angles on the outside run game. And if you have a guy with speed like Hampton, and even, who's the guy that signed from the Ravens, the smaller guy?
Keaton Mitchell.
Keaton Mitchell, thank you.
Keaton Mitchell.
Another guy, I really like that signing too. But another guy with speed that can get to the outside. So really like this with Mike McDaniel. Yes, the offensive line is always going to be a thing, but at least McDaniel has shown an ability to kind of mitigate that. And they have now tight ends and tight end depth, two guys that can be wide tight ends. That's I'm pretty excited about that. I think it's going to be a cool transition to this next year's offense.
Yeah. And again, we'll talk about receivers that are benefit. I think Ladd could have a huge year as a result of this. But yeah, I think this offense 100% is going to lean into it and will be better for it. Last year just got really predictable for Los Angeles. So, yep. You know, sometimes we focus on, especially in fantasy, like, how do we get, how do we get sort of into the, like, raw volume of it all? And I am always willing sometimes to sacrifice some raw volume for efficiency. And we saw that again last year in Seattle, where they were, they had a ton of lost volume in going from Ryan Grubb's offense to Clint Kubiak's, but mm-hmm. the efficiency and the target concentration, especially in the passing game, really helped offset that, in addition to what they just got better in the run game. So they're one of these examples of a team that could do that. Jacksonville, I definitely think is good, which, my God, what a tough nut to crack. But I think Jacksonville is going to lean into some of this. I will say Liam Cohen kind of pushed back on this a little bit, where he said that, you know, we've got a lot of wide receivers we want to play a lot,
right.
Even though James Gladstone said, yeah, we're drafting Nate Borkercher because this is the trend of the league, which I don't know. It feels like a band. Like, anytime everybody's talking about them, they've already hit it big, you know? Like, we want to be before they hit it big. So I don't know. We'll see about that. But their team, I do think, will lean a little bit more into it after not really touching it at all last year.
Yeah, I think it's their, their run game really tapered off last year in the second half of the year. As much as their pass game improved after the Jacoby Myers trade, they ended up being I'd say in the last 8 weeks, the bottom five run game as far as just underlying metrics. And a lot of that was because, you know, Brent Strange, as good as he is a receiver, and he is a feisty blocker. He's willing to scrap. He just can't hold up in line as much as you want. So I think this is their way of just kind of, again, sealing the edge. That was trying to get that guy that can actually do this outside. They had Quentin Morris on the roster last year and they kept him back. But Borkercher's at least a much more valid receiver than Morris. So I think that was some of the thinking. It also, like, if you can't improve the offensive line, there is something to be said about improving the auxiliary blockers. And I think that's maybe some of the Jags thinking, was that this is a way to kind of kill two birds with one stone. But again, it's just I think this is more of just it was kind of what the Rams did maybe 2-3 years ago. Like, they're kind of, like you said, maybe you want to be ahead of the trend as opposed to behind it. But it's more, I think they're like, hey, if a receiver gets hurt, now we're not screwed. Now we can actually lean into this, or this defense is weak against two tight end looks. Now we have a valid thing to do it. Strange is a very good good receiver. So now they have a guy that can free him up a little bit more. So I understood their line of thinking. It was just more that they went with poor Kircher as opposed to maybe some of the other guys that I had maybe rated higher. But that's neither here nor there at this point in time. I'm pretty excited about what the Jags are going to be this year, because just based off the last 8, 9, 10 weeks after they traded for Jacoby Myers and what Liam Cohen and that staff kind of put together without ideal personnel. Now they get an offseason together. Could be pretty fun.
Yeah, I wish I had a strong feeling about which receiver you wanted on this team, because I just really don't, from like a fantasy standpoint. I don't.
And yeah.
It's just difficult, because I think they're a team that I think will end up being like the Green Bay Packers, where it's just of old. The Packers might not be this way this year, because I think they've got a pretty clear three receiver set, and they might actually not be very rotatey. I think this team's going to be very rotatey. And, you know, Nate, the other team I think could be this way too is the Texans, because I think they're a team that is going to flip from being a very three plus receiver set team, where they take Marlon Klein in the second round. Dalton Schultz is obviously a pretty valid block. Foster Moreau they bring in here, and I think they're a team that, especially if and I have no idea what Tank Dell is going to be this year, but if he plays at all, like, he's going to play a little bit, to the point that, like, Nico Collins is going to be on the field all the time, and then, like, Higgins, Noel, and Dell, I think, will all kind of, like, cannibalize each other, because they're a team, again, that I think they've been 31st in rushing success rate since they drafted CJ Stroud. That has to stop. And a big part of that is, like, actually getting some of these valid blocking tight ends on the field.
Yeah, the last year too was that if Schultz got banged up, they were screwed at tight end. Like, Cade Stover is just not that. He's an athlete, not really just like a true blocker or anything. Like, he kind of was a lost cause. I mean, it's not his fault. It's just that he was like a converted linebacker from college. Like, he's always just been a raw athlete that's banged up. So he kind of hasn't kind of honed in on that polish. But you felt that in the playoffs. I mean, Stroud was thrown to Christian Kirk, Jaden Higgins. Schultz got banged up in the first quarter against the Patriots, and then It was like, you didn't even know who he was throwing to. But that's why their run game is kind of stunk, is like Schultz is like a solid blocker. Like he is. He scraps. He has good technique and everything. He's one of the most improved in that area. But their O-line wasn't good enough to like withstand and help that out. And their scheme wasn't as well. So I actually kind of like what they have done. They've given themselves valid bodies. I like Klein. I had him in my top 75. I did think he was like a Coke Zero Kittle is kind of what I attribute him. He's raw, but he's got some like some blocking chops. He's got some strength. He's got some speed. But yeah, I do think that this was a way for, again, an ability to pivot and not be so, if an injury happens, the whole thing kind of falls apart. Give guys just more valid formations and valid personnel. And I kind of liked how they went about it.
I would agree with that. Okay, that does it for us on the Yahoo Sports Network. However, if you're watching with us on YouTube or social, stick with us because we are going to continue this conversation right after this very quick break. All right, so we've talked about the teams that have leaned into this previously and are doing that really well. That was the Seahawks, the Bears, the Rams. We talked about some teams there, threw out a few that could be leaning into it more this year. Ravens, Texans, Dolphins, Jags, Chargers. But Nate, I'm going to, before we talk about some specific wide receivers who could benefit from the tight end revolution, I'm just going to give you the floor to go sicko mode here. Any other teams that you think actually could benefit here from like, or could lean into this trend a little bit this year?
Yeah. Probably a team that I thought maybe had one of my favorite off seasons. And I think in the weirdest way, I feel like they're running, going under the radar. And that's the Patriots, the defending AFC champion Patriots with, I think, what, a quarterback that somehow, some way is now getting knocked back as not being very good. But no, I think that this is, Josh McDaniel has always wanted to lean into multi-tight end looks. He's used personnel groupings with two or fewer receivers on 48% of his team snaps since 2013, five seasons over 50%, including last year. And Hunter Henry is a fine blocker. I'll say okay. And he's a solid receiver, which I guess you could say is okay as well. But he's not really good in either area. But they invested with two guys that I actually liked as a free agent. And I'm surprised the Dolphins didn't keep him, and Julian Hill. And a guy that was my tight end 2A, 2B, depending on what you needed. And Eli Raridan out of Notre Dame. So two guys that Raridan is not theory either as an inline blocker. Like his tape from Notre Dame was him blocking legit D end and outside linebacker edge defenders and holding up and driving and with great technique. And he also tested like a great athlete. He's got length. You know, some of his knocks was he had two ACLs, but that was his senior year of high school and his freshman year of college, and he's been healthy since then. I'm very excited about him, especially in dynasty terms. I think he's a true Y, but also I really like Julian Hill. Julian Hill has been one of these kind of under the radar guys. He's been kind of one of these football 301 guys. Fantasy wise, not very. I think he has a cap to his upside, but in real football terms, yeah, he's a legit. You know, he's going to be like a Josh Oliver. You know, like he'll get a lot, decent amount of snaps, good blocker, but fancy terms, he's going to cap out at 300 yards, you know? But I do think that I love the signing in real football terms. And I do think I get the line of thinking of going for him. And also with Henry already there, you kind of get that nice bridge of the current year. He's a free agent after this year and next year. But McDaniel likes to lean into this anyways. And I think they now actually have the horses to do that and actually have some receiving chops too. And also on top of it, Reggie Gilliam. That they signed from the Bills as a fullback who can also play some tight end too, but he's another kind of dirty work guy. So they want to do this. McDaniel's going to be run heavy. He wants to be in kind of more traditional formations. Now they actually got the horses to do that as opposed to kind of like older Austin Hooper and older Hunter Henry trying to kind of do it as well. So Patriots are one I got to lead off with. I'm pretty bullish on, again, on the Patriots, maybe more than other people are.
Yeah, Austin Hooper, God bless him. He's trying at this point. You know?
He tried.
Like that was where he was. Yeah, that was where he was at. But I mean, yeah, dude, Julian Hill, number one. Yeah, like none of these kind of inline blocking guys, as we, again, revisit the conversation 2 years ago about like Tip Ryman, none of these guys are going to necessarily become like oh, this guy's going to be the next breakout fantasy player. Maybe Eli Raritan is at some point, because I know you like his long-term receiving ability and everything. Like yeah, long term, like he could be the Tucker Kraft or like, you know, AJ Barner type, or it's a couple times a year he's going to give you a little something. Hey, I started AJ Barner, I mean, in the absolute freak show league that we draft at the Fantasy Football Expo, because it's like 14 teams, you start a bazillion players. I started him a lot this year and made it to the divisional round of those playoffs. So it can be done if you play in a freak show type league. Yeah, you got some touchdowns. Okay, but these Julian Hill types, you're not gonna be the next breakout fantasy players, but it's going to increase the offensive ecosystem. I can't believe it took over an hour for me to use the ecosystem word here, but it's going to increase the efficiency of those situations to benefit for the other players around him. I will say, Julian Hill, if you're watching with us on YouTube, like, you see the headshot, he literally looks like an offensive lineman. Okay, like you could slide him over and he could just be one of these offensive linemen simply from a headshot perspective. But I know I've talked a lot about pass catchers and everything like that, but this is a team that their running game stunk last year. Like, they desperately need to run the ball better. I don't have like a strong take on Travion Henderson or anything like that, but I think that's clearly a big part of it. Like, yes, we can discuss about receivers that might benefit on the Patriots or whatever, but priority number one for them is their run game has to be better this year. Yep. And I think signing Gilliam and getting these tight ends in the mix, that's a big part of this here.
Yeah, and Henderson's much better outside the tackles. That's how he was in college and in the NFL so far. Well, it's a lot easier when you have guys that can set the edge. This is the same talk that I had about the Chargers. So now you get tight ends that can actually do it. Like, that really is going to help boost him, where it's not just going to be so boom bust. Like, there's going to be a little bit more sustainability of not just like toss plays, but just even outside zone plays, something that just might just be a little bit more, you know, aligned with his skill set a little bit better. So tight ends can really help a run game. Like, they really can. And I saw the Patriots what they're trying to do. And I'm digging it. I really am.
Okay. Any other teams you want to throw out here? Maybe the team that you wrote down second on the dock with a sigh to it, because I know you can't help yourself, so I'm going to let you lean into it.
Well, it's just the Cardinals. But that's kind of like, they've already been trying to do this. But also, it's just the floor is coming over there. He's a Rams, McVay, he's a Shanahan guy as well. He is a guy that really helped evolutionize, I should say, the Rams run game to be a more duo-centric. And that's kind of what, you know, the Cardinals have a kind of a mixed run game of what they did the last couple of years under Petzing. But now, maybe just being more at you, I think if Tip Ryman is healthy, that's going to fit him perfectly. Even have, you know, keeping McBride off ball, keeping Elijah Higgins off ball, but they have the horses to kind of do it. So that's where I just had it. So maybe it's not they're going to do it more, because actually Petzing used two and three tight ends at a decent clip, but just more like I think they're going to kind of change how they get to it. And I like that, even if, I don't know, the Cardinals have some fun things going on. Like, their whole line actually is not that bad. Like, it's kind of like, you know, and I know they kept the old line coach, but I think LaFleur is going to be more involved, and he kind of knows how to kind of game plan it. And, like, that's one of McVay's gifts, is how to kind of like work around his old line. So I don't know. I know I can't shut up about the freaking Cardinals. So you get a whole new head coach and a new staff, and I'm still like, you know, man, I don't know. Yeah, Carson Beck might be starting games. Jacoby Brissett's holding out, but I could see a path to something down the road, and I actually kind of like what they're building right now.
No, I'm with you. Finally, I'm with you. I wasn't with you on the last Cardinals, but I'm with you on this version, actually, that I do think this could be into. The Cardinals actually saw a 5.4 percentage point drop in their plays of heavy personnel from 2024 to 2025. Some of that could be game script induced, because they were just in a lot of, you know, they were behind a lot. They were spreading things out and like that. But Tip Ryman was hurt. Yeah, but Elijah Higgins actually showed something. He could, I'm not saying he's like as fast as Terrence Ferguson necessarily, but he could actually be part of that, like, maybe because he's a former wide receiver. He was at Stanford. Like, mm-hmm. He could be a guy that splits out and actually clears space in some of these 13 personnel looks. They're actually one of those teams where I will be fascinated to see who ends up becoming like the ISO receiver in 13 personnel looks. Like, is it Marvin Harrison? Is it Michael Wilson? I think Michael Wilson's probably the scrappier player of the two of them. So maybe it
he's
ends
an
up
ideal
being him.
Fit for this offense. Like, Wilson's like a perfect fit for this offense. That's, I know. I know you and I with Harrison, we're fine with him. I am at least, but Michael Wilson like fits like the archetype of like that Rams receiver, like to a T. So I don't know. I'm very curious.
He really does. He does fit it really well. I think that Harrison fits the route concepts pretty well too.
Yeah.
And certainly will get less like pure X vertical stuff than what he was getting in the Petzing offense, which is pretty traditional. That's why I like LaFleur taking this thing over with you. That the offensive line isn't that bad. It's just, and Brissett, like, yeah, they lost a bunch of games with Brissett, and it was a fantasy scam, the production last year, but he's at least, again, a credible, like, you're not, yes. It's not embarrassing to have, it's a little, yes, bit embarrassing to be like, this, we're walking into this season with this guy as the starter, but that's where the Cardinals are right now. But like, he's not, right, he's not a, it's not Desmond Ridder, you know. Like, sorry, yeah, Nate, but it's not Desmond. Whatever. I mean, no, it's not. Yeah.
You, so who's another one?
Hey, Heineke just announced his retirement.
Maybe,
you know?
Another one. You know,
yeah, it's so, not, okay, those, there, yeah, we go. That's something we can agree, yeah, on. It's not Sam. It's not Sam Howe. Like, come on. Like, which, yeah, actually happened. Washington actually did walk into the season with like,
with a straight face,
Ron Rivera talking about, we're gonna start Sam Howe. Okay, good luck. I'm going to take a bazillion sacks, which is actually what happened. So, yeah, I do think that the Cardinals could end up being an interesting team that ends up kind of benefiting from this, and we do see some of their players really take a step forward. I'll just quickly read off some of the other teams that you threw out here that I do think, yeah, are interesting to watch, to monitor. Cowboys, Giants. I think Giants will definitely lean into it with Isaiah Likely and Theo Johnson. I wish their number one wide receiver was healthy. He is not. Eagles, Bills, Saints. I really like the Saints, yeah, taking Oscar Delp, because they went the other way of the trend last year, where they had a 34% increase in terms of their plays with 3+ receivers on the field last year. I know they want to spread things out. They want to be that kind of up-tempo offense a little bit, what you were, mm-hmm, talking about, away from the trend. But I think they would like to lean into this a little bit more than they did last year, which was like stone 0% last year, because Juwan Johnson, yeah, is, to use one of your phrases, a Tino, a tight end in name only.
Yeah, yeah, I know, that's Eli Stowers, Juwan Johnson, Mike Gesicki. You know, there's only a few of those right now, so it's kind of funny to see them actually still have those roles. But no, I think that's what it is. Again, they just want to, I think they just were victims of what their personnel was. They're just like, all right, these are just playable players, so we got to go 11. You know, we got to get these guys on the field. So again, it's a way for them to pivot. Pretty excited to see what the Saints do this year. You know, Shuck, I think, is a nice kind of, at the very least, a steady horse. And I, you know, of course, with the Jordan Tyson pick, but no, I, Noah Fant too. Noah Fant's not perfect. Of course, he's considered a bust because he's a first rounder, but for what his role will probably be, it's going to help them at least just give him more varied looks with Oscar Delp in there too. And now Delp doesn't have to be a 40 snap guy right away. He can be a 15, 20 snap guy right away. So no, I'm excited. I want to see what happens with Alvin Kamara, because that's such a weird, yeah, situation. Weird but one. The ETN Devin Neal combo, really dig it. The run game wise. So I think that's another thing too, is they're trying to boost up their run game and just help out Tyler Shuck. Just give him, it's not just so much weapons, but more just like, okay, now the run game can be a little bit more varied. We can get to a little bit more in our offense too. But yeah, I'm glad you brought up the tempo thing too, because they were on that very early on. I talked to some of those guys, but they said it was just like, we were just trying to get simple looks. Like, we were just, yeah, trying to, you know, that was the Rattler in there. They were just trying to make it simple, mm-hmm, on ourselves somehow, but they did some cool stuff with it. So again, yeah, they maybe are a team that's, you know, I think they're trying to do some smart things under Kellen Moore. The Saints are doing some cool stuff.
Yeah, we like the Saints. So we've already kind of we've been hammering that, I think, since January. Yeah. That we like this offense, and this is one that I think is a sneaky one to, maybe it's not that sneaky anymore after they took Jordan Tyson, but a sneaky one to invest in from a fantasy standpoint. And I do like, yeah, them getting Delp in the mix here. Whether he becomes, yeah, that long-term tight end sleeper or not, I do think it's going to allow them to get into more of these heavier personnel looks and just be more varied. They were very, very static last year. Not static from like in the bad way, but just like they just did the same thing kind of over and over again. So we'll see what happens there. But let's get into the part of the conversation. We'll wrap it up here with what I'm really excited to talk about, and that is which wide receivers end up benefiting from this. Because this is why, like, yeah, I can, as a straight up football guy, yeah, of course, I love this. I love this revolution, the whole deal, of course. But I think I said this to you at some point over the last few years, that, you know, people always talk about, like, oh, the Rams heavier personnel. It's like, yeah, they're putting those tight ends on the field to like control the flats while they hammer Puka Nacua with the bajillion inbreakers over and over again. Like, this is about the wide receivers here. And this does bear out in the data. This from Ryan Heath of Fantasy Points Data, who just had a good, really good article on this. I would encourage people to check it out. But wide receiver efficiency, when there's two or fewer wide receivers on the field, they see a 16 percentage point increase in their targets per route run, a 35% increase in their yards per route run, and a 32% increase in their fantasy points per route run. Whereas tight ends, two or fewer wide receivers on the field versus three or fewer wide receivers on the field, they only see a 2% increase in targets per route run, 11% increase in yards per route run, and 20% in fantasy points per route run. So again, just really the targets per route, yards per route, the receivers are the ones that benefit from this. As we talked about the JSN example with the highest target share of the last 10 years. So again, we've talked about all these different teams, Nate. Give me one wide receiver that you think can real, like you think like, okay, this team's going to lean into it. It's going to be good. We have confidence in it. It's going to be good. Like, which receiver benefits from this? We've hinted at a few, but give me one that you think here.
Yeah, I wrote down five kind of varied names. Some have already had hit highs, but I'm going to go Chris Olave. I know it's kind of one of your dudes too, but Chris Olave, we just talked about the Saints, maybe it's because it's just on my mind. But if we get into some of these two tight end looks, like he has a full route tree available to him. And imagine him on some of those inbreakers. Maybe you don't want him over the middle and getting his head hit another time. But you also get a lot of outbreakers. You get some corner routes. You get some out routes. Stuff that Tyler Shuck's pretty comfortable throwing as well. But you can get some more verticalness to his, you know, kind of his receiving profile. The Saints O-line's dang good. Like, that's a top 10 O-line. I would even say maybe even a little higher than that. So why I'm bringing that up is if we get to more play action, if we get to more two tight end looks, what Kellen Moore has done in the past, that creates more vertical opportunities for Olave and Jordan Tyson, of course. But Olave,
of course, yeah,
obviously is at 1,000 yard receivings, but I think maybe it just takes that bigger leap where it's more into that like explosives into racking up big plays and big weeks, week after week. So I know he's already taken a little bit of a leap, and I know that's not a new name, yada, 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 but I think he maybe takes that next big leap because this offense kind of gives him more of those opportunities. I think, yeah, if you want to go with who's the JSN, like, I'm not saying maybe those highs, but like, his route profile fits that type of offense perfectly. So if they can lean into that where he's just intermediate vertical guy, yeah, I mean, he's one guy. I know that's kind of a basic name to bring up, but maybe just one that I could really do think is going to fit this perfectly.
But I'm glad you brought that up because I think the instinct for people will be like, oh, he's a regression candidate because he's likely not going to get might not get 156 targets again this year, but the efficiency of those targets might increase.
Yes.
Like the verticality of those targets might increase. That already kind of happened in the back half of the year with Tyler Shuck anyways, whereas with Spencer Rattler, it was just like quick out, over and over again.
Yes.
And then they already started hitting him on more of those big inbreakers and the deeper out patterns with Tyler Shuck anyway. So I think that's a good one to sort of, like, I still have Chris Olave.
Oh, I was going to say, I think there's sometimes a misattribution. I'm butchering words right now, but where a route runner is only the quicker is better for the route runner. A route runner, you want to let him unfold on his route. You want to let him break multiple times. And why I'm bringing that up is Olave, I think, is an excellent route runner. And now you get let him, what he did at Ohio State and what he's done in his career and hinted at in his career, let him break multiple times. And that way get to the intermediate areas and it's just juicier for him rather than slants and outs and quits. That's not his game. His game is kind of let him go, let him break guys off on routes. Cause I think he's an exquisite route runner. So that's why I kind of want to break that up and why
Couldn't agree more. Maybe
I brought up the JSN comparison is that it's like, let him unfold on the routes because that's what his gift is as a receiver.
Yeah, I mean, the JSN's a great example. I've said this a lot, but he was the best receiver in the NFL last year at lying to defensive backs where he'd be telling them, like, I'm breaking in, I'm breaking out, I'm breaking out, I'm breaking in with his head in that intermediate area. And you do need some time to let those routes really unfurl. That's a good way, like, unfurl is a really good way of saying it by you. To the point, that, yeah, it's like that, I would say it's like the quick twitch, like, stuff that's great for TikTok, but like, I want you really Run routes with intention and don't waste any time at those break points. So you really let a guy like Chris Olave do that. We saw that with JSN. Yeah, I still have Chris Olave ranked inside my, I think, my top 12 wide receivers this year. It's freaking May. Nobody's accountable to your rankings yet. I will probably keep that pretty consistent throughout. But two other players I think that are worth talking about in terms of that sort of archetype there of the route runners who you really want to let unfurl. One, we've said his name a couple of times so far, but I think Ladd McConkey fits into this exact same archetype of player, where his best stuff to me, Nate, is in that intermediate area, the digs, the outs. And they tried to, like, Greg Roman actually was pretty good at weaponizing him off, like, motion and especially on the outcuts and stuff like that. But you know what is tough when you're that type of receiver, when your quarterback doesn't have any pass protection, that could be a little bit difficult, and you're in these spread looks and you don't have extra blockers in the box to kind of help out. We'll see about the health of the offensive line. Of course, that's a big part of this, but I do think structurally, and you know, hopefully those tackles are they can't be less healthy than they were last year. So I know that's our buddy Charles McDonald says that's the worst thing to say. It can't get worse. It could get worse. I guess you never know, but hopefully if they're healthier along the offensive line structurally, I think this is setting up to be a big, big, big year. Like, I think Ladd McConkey is the most obvious bounce back candidate in the NFL.
I think so too. And you bring this up all the time, but condensed splits. And this offense loves condensed splits. And for a guy that I think is a, you know, I get why he gets pigeonholed as maybe just a crafty slot guy. I get it. I know what Ladd McConkey looks like. But he's very good on the outside as well. And a guy that is a plus-plus route runner, at the very least a plus route runner, you want to give him the whole field to work with so they can stem. And, I mean, that's where JSN. So a guy that can be valid from the slot or the outside using those condensed splits when you're in two tight end looks or even three tight end looks, it's going to let them use the whole field as a route runner. So you kind of, it's kind of a hybrid, you know, it's kind of the slot, but it's also kind of the outside when you're using those kind of condensed splits. And so that's where I think Ladd is just going to cook. My comparison for him has always been Emmanuel Sanders. That's what it was as a prospect. That's what it was in the NFL. And I think this offense will let him just flourish. And even the auxiliary guys, like Quinn Johnston, like actually will fit this offense decently just because they're going to have him run just a lot of inbreakers and just let him go. And like there's going to be some yak opportunities for him. So even if he's not always getting the ball, I actually think that personnel works decently. But yeah, I think Ladd's going to cook in this offense.
Absolutely going to cook. So he's a major one here. Yeah. No pen meter. We're not eating the pen for Ladd McConkey this year. He's going to smash. No question about that. That's a good throwback joke, to last season. Let's just talk about the Bears guys here. Okay.
Yeah.
Because like you mentioned unfurling as a route runner. Listen, I do think Roma Dunze fits really well in this archetype of player as well. Like his stuff to me is really, he's got to catch the ball. He's got to have better feel for zone coverage. I do think it's not like been terrible, the zone coverage stuff. It's just been like average-ish, and I think it can be better. And he certainly can be better from a contested catch standpoint this year than last year. There's no question about that. But I mean, this is, again, is already a proof of concept for this team. Last year, out of 12 personnel, Luther Burden, 21.3 yards per game. Roma Dunze, 18 yards per game. Obviously wasn't healthy in the back half. And this is something that I think people, again, just keep misunderstanding about this Bears, these two Bears receivers and everything like that. Last year in the games I tracked for reception perception, Luther Burden was only in the slot on 37% of his snaps. He was in the backfield as like a motion guy at 5.6%. He was off the line of scrimmage for 54% of his snaps. So more in that like Z archetype of receiver than a true slot. Odunze was 53% on the line of scrimmage, in the slot for 29%, and in the backfield again as that motion guy for like 6% of his snaps. Like, I think we pigeonhole like Burden's the slot guy and Odunze's the X. Like,
yeah,
Odunze kind of was a little bit more X-ish when he returned from the injury, but he even said to us at the Super Bowl in our interview, like, he was pretty out of sync because of all the missed practice and stuff like that. I wonder if they just kind of stuck him there a little bit, sacrificial stuff, but we'll see what that looks like. But from a role perspective, early in the year last year, like, this guy is moving all across the formation, like running routes as the insert player up the line of scrimmage. That's where some of that backfield snaps come from here. So I love both these Bears wide receivers. I think they both fit well in like the unfurling the routes, as you mentioned there. But so yeah, like both of these guys, I think, are going to be huge beneficiaries of having more tight ends on the field.
The hardest part is actually a good thing for them, is that Ondunze and Burton are good blockers, which I already hinted at earlier, but that makes it harder for me to predict. If one of them was an easily better blocker, I would just be like, yeah, him. That's the one that they're going to put on the field. but both of them are good. Like, they legit are good. Ondunze, I expected to be. Burton is way better. I mean, I'm telling you, it's one of the most pleasant surprises. Because I'm even looking right now, as you're talking, I was looking this up for the Lions under Ben Johnson. When they were in 13 personnel, or when they had one or fewer receiver, Amon-Ra St. Brown got the most snaps. Obviously, he's the best receiver, but it like wasn't even close. It wasn't like, you know, Jameson Williams had a decent amount of snaps, but it was like, St. Brown, we're getting him on the field. Like, you know, and like, he's our best receiver and he's our best blocker, you know. But I was curious. I was like, did he put Khalif Raymond? I remember when they did have a tell. When Khalif Raymond was on the field, it was a shot play. Like, it was kind of a, you know, hey, we're getting him on the field for a reason. Yeah, here we go. He had, Khalif Raymond was on the field for 10 snaps of 13 personnel. He got the ball on four of those. So, yeah, he was kind of in there for a reason. But I do think both of these guys fit this perfectly. I think you usually go with the X that can be a power slot type. To me, that's Ondunze. A Burton, I think, is one of these. A Z, a really good one that can play in the slot as well. They're just different types. But either one is valid, which makes it hard to predict. And I always go back to your kind of piece of advice sometimes. And this maybe was the Packers discussion, when you can't really predict which guy bet on the quarterback, the guy throwing the ball to him and reap the benefits from it. So, like, that's, to me, my fantasy advice is like, I'd probably go Loveland and Caleb more than the two receivers, you know, as opposed to that. But man, it's, in a good football sense, both of these guys are going to fit great in this. Predicting it fantasy terms is really hard. So, long way to stall to say, like, yeah, I'm excited to see you watch it all play out.
Yeah, the funny part is last year in 13 personnel, DJ Moore, 53 snaps out of 13 personnel.
He got the most.
So it's like,
yeah,
he got the most because he was the shot play guy. He's the vertical.
Yes.
He was the sacrificial player in this offense, which is why he's not there anymore, because they weren't going to play $20 million to the sacrificial player in the offense.
But
so
the Bills next
the
year.
Role is. That's true. Bills definitely could. Moore is somebody that's going to be so fascinating to debate. And like, a reason I haven't really talked about him much on the show is I honestly have no idea what to really expect from him this year. But they could lean into this for sure.
You know who's a random one I want to throw out here, because we mentioned the team, the Giants? Malachi Fields. He's like perfect for bowling.
Talk about it. Yeah.
He's what I mentioned, the X that could be a power slot. That's perfect for, that's the ideal guy you want in 13 personnel. Because we mentioned, like, okay, having a guy like Colson Loveland that could be a tight end but also split out receiver. It's the inverse of that with the receiver. That could be the ISO guy, but also can be a valid blocker if we want to get into funkier looks and invert the guys. Fields, I think, is great. They're talking him up highly, if you've noticed.
They love him.
They love him. They love him.
Did you see the draft call between him and John Harbaugh? Number one, there was a clip that was going around where Harbaugh said to Joe Shane, which again shows you who's wearing the pants in that relationship, as we all knew. But like, I think right after they took Francis Mauanoa, John Harbaugh said to Joe Shane, like, all right, now we got to start figuring out how we're going to trade up for Malachi Fields. That was in the first round. And then like, they did trade up for him on date. They did trade up for him, and Harbaugh was on the phone with him. It's like, see, we said God would make this happen. God is involved here, Nate. God is involved with getting Malachi Fields to the Giants. And yeah, like, obviously we're showing on the screen. We're showing Malik Nabers on the screen. Nabers is going to, we'll see what he looks like. We'll see when he plays. I don't know. But I totally agree with this. Like, I keep forgetting that they signed Chris Manhertz, who's like literally an extra offensive lineman. They have two, like, Theo Johnson can play in line. Isaiah Likely's the, tight end in name only. Mm-hmm. And yeah, man, Fields, I've really warmed on him a lot post. They got Pat Ricard. Like, I think I liked Fields as a receiver, I think, more than a lot of people did, especially in the fantasy space. He's never going to be like a great separator, I think, down the field against man coverage. But you see the former quarterbackness to his game. Yeah. He's a high school quarterback in the Charlottesville area. And he is a zone. He's so good against zone coverage. He knows how to read leverage. He knows, especially on curls and stuff like that. So, and his route tree fits Jackson Dart really well, even if it's just like contested catch. He's so good on the stop routes, and Dart loves to throw those like stop routes in the boundary. So, yeah, Fields, I've really, I love that you brought him up here because he does fit in this sort of zone.
The Giants, I've really kind of there. I'm very curious to watch them first off, but it's just the field. I'm with you in the Fields. I think we were kind of in lockstep on Fields, but I think we kind of graded them the same. We liked some of the aspects. We both thought that he could be a power slot type. I think even before the draft, I compared him maybe like you hope that he can be like a Juwan Jennings type. But I actually have kind of marinated more and kind of liked him more. Maybe it was because I was watching CJ Carr, their quarterback. And it's like when you take like a breath and you're not just focusing, I'm like, man, Fields really did have some nice plays in this game. I just didn't like really kind of give him that tip of the cap. Or I'm watching a couple more Notre Dame games. But I agree. Like, I think he's got some potential to be a real good number two that can do the dirty work stuff, but also you match his dart a little bit. And he just has something too getting out of his breaks. He doesn't like, he just knows how to kind of really run out of them for such a big player. So there is something to him. Yeah. But anyways, I like where the Giants were kind of getting at with their run game and what these auxiliary blockers, as I'll call them. You mentioned the tight ends, Manhurts, Theo Johnson, Ricard, and all that. Like, we'll see with Scadaboo if he's healthy, but man, if I like him if he's healthy, because I think they're going to pound the rock and they got the means to do so, and Fields is a part of that.
Yeah, I love that, the Fields stuff there, and I agree. Their run game is one that's really going to be interesting if we consider looking at some of these personnel packages, stuff like that. One more kind of like obvious guy that already is going to be really highly ranked and everybody knows is good, but I mentioned the Texans earlier. I think Nico Collins is a receiver who could really benefit from this because
I have him written down right here.
I think if you okay, good, because we already know he's a super efficient wideout. He's also really good, disgustingly good, really in the intermediate area, dig routes, out routes in that kind of zone. And I do think they'll lean more into heavier personnel stuff like that. And I mean, Jaden Higgins, I think, could be like the blocker in those like looks and stuff like that. But I do think that. Again, if Tank Dell is healthy, which I think there's like no shot he'll ever be the player that he was in 2023. It's just been too many injuries, whatever. But like, he's going to have to play a little bit. But he was a perimeter player in the beginning of his career in 23. He was not a slot guy. I think people have forgotten this because he's 160-something pounds. He was like an outside vertical screamer receiver. I think he ends up kind of eating into some of the outside snaps. Higgins is like a guy who can, I actually liked his reps at Z last year, but can also play in the slot. Just shouldn't really be an X receiver ever. Knoll's a really, really good player as well. Like, he needs to see the field. I think all those guys like rotate and kind of like cannibalize and eat the scraps. But then Nico's that ISO receiver who's on the field all the time, over 80% of the snaps, 80% of the routes, and gets like a really, really high target share in this offense. So I don't know. It kind of feels like people in fantasy right now are down on Nico Collins based on an episode we did recently where I said he was a guy that I thought should be going higher, and people did not like that take. He's like kind of dropping in dynasty rankings. I think Nico's in line for a big year if he can stay healthy.
I do too. And it's not, I know they drafted those receivers from Iowa State last year, Higgins and Knoll, but those are meant to be secondary auxiliary players to Nico Collins.
Yes.
You know, like there's other receivers that are boosting up the talent, but Nico's the ace. Like, and these offenses, if it's going to be two receivers, the traditional X skill set becomes more valued because just the thing, I mean, JSN excelled at it to an extent that's even more that I couldn't believe, but it's so cool to watch. But that's what Nico's kind of calling card is. He's one of the true guys that can do the X stuff. Like, he can do the stuff that's true on ball, doesn't need to be in motion. He can do other stuff too and move him around. But if you're going to get into these run formations with two tight ends and wing looks and all that, and I'm trying to just picture what this offense has done in those looks, all right, then the X is that static guy on the ball, got to win vertically. Nico can do that. Nico easily do that. Yeah. I've seen him do that with Bobby Slowick's offense. So it's like, all right, cool. So the names that I wrote down were Malachi Fields, Chris Olave, Nico Collins, Ladd McConkey. And then if we got to it, I was going to say AJ Brown in the hypothetical, because if they get to the Patriots with the two, you know, I think he has a bounce back year with that and also going with May and stuff. But I think Nico Collins is an easy one because I can envision it so easily because he's done it before. And I think that's what this offense is trying to lean into. So yeah, I'm glad you brought him up because, yeah, I agree. His stock seems way, way down. And I know he's been banged up, and I guess, you know, concussions are scary and stuff. But, man, he's a guy I was considering up there with the elite guys just not too long ago.
Same. No, yeah. He's a top five. Whether you actually sit down and do the rankings,
top five receiver talent
yes. in the league. Yes. And I don't even blink when I say something like that. Like, he's legit Same. That good. So I love the potential for him to consolidate looks and targets in this offense. Okay, I lied. One last question. Any lean on who the Jags receiver would be in this situation? I'm actually kind of warming up in wanting to talk about this receiver room, but like, who do you think of the four guys plus the tight ends, like, who's the receiver that you think could benefit if they lean into this sort of world?
My head is saying Jacoby Myers. My heart is saying Parker Washington. that's where I'm at. But the thing, my answer there is BTJ is last. Even though BTJ should have been one that's good with that, they probably, when you go into a one receiver looks, you want the receiver out there that you can trust the most, which is usually your best receiver. But you can tell the Jags coaches don't trust BTJ. And who knows, maybe this offseason, it's like he's earned our trust. Right. I think if I were to handicap this race, I would say Jacoby Myers would be the favorite, but Parker Washington wouldn't be that much further behind him because he can do dirty work stuff. He's got some twitch to him. He can attack vertically. He can do all the things that you want in those type of looks. So I would still say Jacoby because of how good he is as a blocker, kind of has that traditional Z skill set that can kind of work in this if you just go one receiver looks. But in two receiver looks, he's the ideal Z. He digs out safeties, all that. So, yeah, head answer, Jacoby. Heart answer, Parker Washington. But I think BTGA is the one that kind of gets hurt by this a little bit.
He is. It's weird because he's the prototypical X, right? Like, of this group.
Yeah.
You know, Washington's a slot first player. Myers is a Z slot. Like, it should be yes. Brian Thomas Jr. It should be, but, and it is, you're 100%. He should be the easy answer. You're 100% right to acknowledge this, that like, he could come in this offseason, he's just way more locked in. Cause like, I've started charting him last, it's just so discouraging, man. Like, it's just, it really is. It's tough. Yeah. Like, the player he was, if he's the player he was in his rookie year, like, yeah, he's the answer. But so that, like, I think that guy is still in there. Like, you got to leave the light on for that, but you just have no idea. So I think that's why it's so hard to handicap and pick like which one of these guys should it be. Not to mention, like, if you're saying your head, your heart, like, maybe this is my, like, I'm talking out of my butt with this. But like, I mean, Travis Hunter, I think, could even be like the explosive element of this. Like, how are we finding plays to put him on offense? Like, when we get into 13 or 12 personnel, like, we need somebody to rip it in that intermediate area, which mm-hmm. he was starting to really come along in that downfield route running kind mm-hmm. of zone at that point before he got hurt last year. This is where we find the ways to sprinkle him in, because I think what we've seen from this weird internet war about where is he going to play, like, everybody from the team says, like, his corner snaps are going up. And I do think that we all know that his corner snaps are going up, but they still say he's going to play on offense. It probably won't be as a full-time player. Like, I do think this, what we saw last year with the Packers, that's the room I keep coming back to. This was the route percentage for the Packers last year. Romeo Doubs, 74%. Everybody else is under 50%. I don't think it's going to be that exaggerated in Jacksonville, but because they got to find ways to get all four of these guys on the field, because they want to get these tight ends out there, it could be one of these rotate-y situations. Like, there is a chance, again, that we get into 13 personnel looks, heavy personnel packages. This is where we put Travis Hunter on the field, as opposed to like kind of the Mickey Mouse stuff that they were doing at the beginning of last year that really wasn't working at all for anybody.
No, this is where you get into what I mentioned with like Khalif Raymond. That's always been another thing with 13 personnel. And also the Falcons did, and I always blank on his name. I feel like this is the third time I've brought this guy up in the last like year or last like month. In the 2016, that small, speedy receiver for the Falcons.
Taylor Gabriel.
Thank you, Taylor Gabriel. But when they would get into 13, they would get into heavy personnel looks. Okay, we're guaranteeing that we're getting base defense and we're guaranteeing certain coverages, and they would run deep shot plays to whoever the speedy receiver was. That's how Khalif Raymond was used actually in Tennessee as well. When they had Corey Davis and AJ Brown. So why I'm bringing that up is that that's a great way to spoon feed package play Travis Hunter, and to not make it so it's just running choice routes every single time he's on the field. So it's okay, when we're in 13 personnel, we'll call it 13 personnel Travis. And I'm dead serious, this is how teams do it. 13 Travis. All right, Travis is out there as the lone receiver, and he has like two plays that he has to know. And that's how you do the package plays. That's how you do it. And I can envision that. pretty easily. So like, yeah, yeah. And if you look at their other receivers, none of those guys are, I mean, Thomas in a perfect world would be that, but Hunter is their guy. That's Cohen's guy. That's Gladstone's guy.
He's still the best. I mean, listen, people can ignore me, whatever. When I talk about Travis Hunter, all they want, whatever. I don't care. He's their best, like just man coverage receiver. I'm not talking about like separator. I'm not talking about like route running, being at the depth of all that stuff. It has a long way to go in terms of like zone coverage and stuff like that, based on what we saw at the beginning of last year. But if we're just talking about like, there's a guy across from you, like this is a base big ass defense over there. The guy that's going to separate the best is still the guy they took second overall in last year's draft. So, yeah, I'm with you on that. That could be a really interesting way to like actually sprinkle him in as that package player. Yep.
I mean, I'm looking even at another. Oh, here's a modern comparison, maybe Marvin Mims for the Broncos. When they go one receiver looks, oh, Marvin Mims, shot play guy. Like, there we go. Launch him to Marvin. But that's a way to use a package player, quote unquote, in a more real receiver sense. But it's kind of fun, actually, because they usually could lead to some big plays. And I was looking it up, just curious, as we've been talking. I was like, all right, one receiver looks like who kind of ran the most routes. And weird, it's typically the best receivers. Trying to get them out there. But Chris Olave, 60% target share on 20 snaps when he was on one receiver looks. So there was one right there. But no, it's typically some of the best players. Usually, again, those big snaps. But then, yeah, and then you get some kind of like shot play type of guys. Shamari DK for the Titans. You know, guys like that that are just, hey, you're out here, run post routes, run a deep corner and get off the field. And that's what we're going to do with that. Jalen Waddle has had a ton of Rashid Shaheed had a ton of receiver snaps where he was the only one out there. Because, hey, you're going to be the vertical guy on this shot play. So there's a role to that.
Yeah. Receivers that had over 60 yards in 13 personnel looks last year. Obviously, the massive gap here. Puka Nacua, 341.
Yeah, he was
both. Gap. DK Metcalf, 159. I feel like one of those had to be just like that one catch and run play. I don't know. Yeah, right. 159. Another gap, Devontae Adams, 96, Rashid Shaheed, 87, Michael Wilson, 78, Zay Flowers, somebody we probably should have talked about somewhere along the way. Mm-hmm, Zay Flowers has literally already been this guy, and like now Declan Doyle's coming in there. Chris Olave, 70, Marvin Harrison, 66. That's interesting. Darnell Mooney, 65, and then I mentioned it earlier, DJ Moore, 61. Those are the only guys at the receiver position that over 60 yards. And just because I mentioned DJ Moore again, and because you keep saying the name Khalif Raymond, I do just want to note, like, we talked about the Bears receivers and those 13 personnel levels. Khalif Raymond is literally on the Bears roster. So, like, there's...
Yes.
He's literally on the roster, and they drafted Xavien Thomas, who I think is Khalif Raymond 2.0 for Ben Johnson. Yeah. So there is a chance that... In the great wars that is Adunze versus Burden, and like, okay, which one's going to be? It could be one of those two dudes is the 13 personnel receiver, which would just be a hilarious twist.
It kills me that Ben Johnson, who obviously you can see his fingerprints all over who the Bears draft on offense, especially, that he's like, I need my Khalif Raymond. You know what? Let's get Khalif Raymond. And I'm going to draft another guy that reminds me of Khalif Raymond. He's like, no, I went a year without him and I want him on my roster.
Biblical
I get
it. Greed. I love
Yeah. That's a great way to put it. You know, speaking of our guys, another one that was heavily targeted on 13 or one receiver or fewer looks, Trey Tucker. You got to mention Trey Tucker.
Because
that's another perfect guy that could take the top off on that. But no, yeah, I'm glad you brought up Khalif Raymond again being on the Bears, because that could throw a nice little wrench into our whole discussion there. just draft Colson Loveland. That's my advice.
Draft Colson Loveland, draft Caleb Williams, but I'm going to try to pick a Bears receiver. I mean, listen, but I said this yesterday on Twitter. I know. I've done the research. The reception perception R&D team has been deep in the weeds on this one. You are actually allowed to like two receivers from one team. You are allowed.
You are.
It's permissible.
I like Michael Wilson. I like Marvin Harrison Jr. I like both of them. I like multiple culture receivers. Shocking. I like both of them.
There we go. There we go. Perfect. Okay, Nate, I think we exhausted this conversation.
Great.
I have to write an article about this next week too. So we'll talk more about, I'll talk more about these receivers that could benefit in these personnel packages and unpack that a little bit. But before we go, gotta let you guys know that the all new 2026 soccer pick'em game is here just in time for the world's biggest soccer tournament. That's right. Make picks each round, earn points, and climb the leaderboard. You can play solo. You can create a private league with your friends. You can also join a public group to play with other fans, or even join our Yahoo Sports group to see if you can beat us. Join at yahoofantasy.com/soccerpick'em. Nate, hell of a show. Appreciate you joining me. What else are you working on besides? I saw with the quarterback show was what, an hour 47, something like that?
Yeah, it was 2 hours. With Greg I would have gone longer, Bill. Too. I would push that. I would push that to 2.5 if I had a choice. But I need people to lock me down, especially if I'm doing one show a week. I got a lot of pent up thoughts. Thanks for letting me spill on here. One show a week. You'll be on next week. Hopefully, we're gonna do a nice little skill player draft, which I'm excited about. Yeah, not just receivers, like but running backs and tight ends too. And also, I'm writing about units, like improved units or units of the season, you know, kind of units that can decide the season. So Chargers tight ends are actually one of the ones I'm talking about. Patriots tight ends are another. Patriots pass catchers are another. But yeah, kind of prep some thoughts today on this show for that article. So I appreciate it.
Well, somewhere along the way in the hour 40 plus we've been talking, hopefully you got something good there for that article. Hopefully there was something useful for the people out there too. I really enjoyed this show. That's going to do it for us today. Reminder, folks, we are one pod a week through mid-July. This show is going to hit your feed Wednesday afternoon. Next Wednesday, Justin Boone is back joining the show live at 2 p.m. Eastern. We will see you all then. Until then, we are out.